This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's already hour number 4 of the nation here on a Cowboys Monday. Hope you're having a good one so far. Thanks for making us part of your day. Thanks to everybody streaming at radio.com and on Twitch. Hey, just because you hop out of the truck, show is not over. You can stream that bad boy through several different apps now on your smartphone device. The question here, was Jason Garrett just a blind spot? Or possibly was he a symptom of a bigger problem for the Cowboys relative to coaching? Now, we did just witness Jason Garrett as head coach for a decade. They insisted, oh, no, this is going to be fine. He learned on the job. Now he learned on the job. Is that hanging on to him for that long? Biggest mistake of Jerry Jones' football career, okay? Are similar mistakes possible? Would be my question here for you at 877-881-1053. I have about 4 pieces of evidence here for you that, to me, frames how Jerry looks at coaches. And tell me what it adds up to for you. By the way, please leave your name and city you're texting from. We'll make you famous right here in the G-Bag Nation. By the way, Steven today, about the coaching, said, Jerry and I are big believers in sticking with the coaching staff. Yeah, Steve. Didn't need to tell us that one.
<We're> Pretty aware, obvious, right, sir?
What else you want to break here? Earth's round, not a flat earther. Okay, good. You and Jerry believe the earth is round. Good to know. But I just think Jerry believes that getting the right coach isn't that important. I think he looks at it the same way when he fired Jimmy Johnson. There are 500 coaches who could have won the Super Bowl with our team. Okay? So that is item number one that makes me think Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, the Cowboys front office, does not put enough importance in having the right head coach. They literally think there's hundreds of guys that can do it, and as long as you give them good enough players and things go their way, they'll win the Super Bowl. That's a way, by the way, of Jerry giving himself in the front office more credit than the coach, okay? Don't let that point get lost on you. And I think when he said there are 500 coaches who could have won the Super Bowl, that was a little bit of a shot at Jimmy. But it was also a true statement and revealed many years ago how the Cowboys front office looks at coach. Now, on to item number 2. They only interviewed 2 people, Mike McCarthy and Marvin Lewis.
That's right.
To get the Rooney Rule out of the way.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Was that a real interview? I hope so. I doubt it. Okay. So was there an exhaustive search? Did they believe, boy, we better talk to everybody to make sure we're not missing something? No. They knew who they wanted, and they're like, it doesn't matter anyway. Coaches are coaches, and if you get them enough good players, they should win the Super Bowl for you. Number 3, when Jason was coach, he would say towards the end there, what Jason really needed was to win one. Then people will look at everything he does differently. That was actually a consistent talking point from Jerry Jones. And then on top of that, you take what he said last week, just Friday right here in the G-Bag Nation. He was talking about Mike McCarthy and all the criticism he's facing. And where Jerry goes with this will further illustrate exactly what I'm talking about right here. Here's Mr. Jones.
Now, don't think that Mike McCarthy isn't a big boy and got big shoulders and can't handle anything they want to throw at him. Mm-hmm. He's been to school on that and had it. That's one of the reasons I wanted him here, is because it hadn't just been success for him. He's dealt with both those imposters, the success imposter and the failure imposter, and he's done well with it.
Okay, so what he's talking about right there is you know, the success imposter. You want it, so you're the guy that knows how to win it. You got the secret sauce. Well, Jerry's looking at it more like, well, you know, there was a matter of circumstances and it was your day and a lot of guys trying their hardest, but you happen to be the guy that won. The failure imposter, oh, look at that loser. That guy can never win, right? And neither one of those things are true, which is good. And it's an amazing tool for management, because now I can look at my human resources and understand, listen, we're all human. I can't be too tough on this guy for losing. I can't believe this guy is without fault for winning. But if you use that then as a reason to be lazy in your coaching search, now the failure versus success imposter theory isn't something that's made you more wise. It's something that's made you more lazy. I conclude my point, gentlemen. The Jones families do not care about getting a good coach.
Oh, I think that you make really good points in there. I think there's a lot of evidence in the way that they've done their coaching search. I think we kicked around a lot of names when they were looking like they were going to be in the market for a head coach. And I think what happened is they interviewed a guy that they really got along well with, and he had had NFL success, and so I think it was pretty easy for him, because I do think that's important. Is, do we feel like we can talk to this guy, communicate well, be around him, probably hang out with him, things like that? Yeah, I think that matters on this team. And I think that's the one part that is always going to exist with the Cowboys that I don't know how many other teams it's true for, that there are things outside of how well does he do his job that go into the hiring process, for sure.
Okay, Brian, what do you think? I think those are good points, Jeff. Appreciate your feedback there.
No, I like what Jeff said in general. I like what you said. I think if you look at the history of Jerry Jones hires, they've always been with something in mind. Each one has been different. I go back into, you know, Dave Campo was a coach that, you know, he fires Chan Gailey after, you know, he's thinking offensive coordinator, I'll work with Aikman, all this will be good. Aikman hated the guy, so they move on from him. So they get Dave Campo, who they have familiarity with. You know, three bad years there. All of a sudden, wait, I got to get a stadium built here. I can't hire Dave Campo's guys anymore. I can't hire those guys. I got to hire a coach that legitimately will get a vote passed so I can get a stadium built. Now you go get Bill Parcells, you know, to be your coach, and then you learn some things along the way. The whole thing with Wade Phillips is like, that was, okay, wait a minute now. We went from a really hard butt type of coach, a guy that was graded on people, that made things not fun for you, to a guy that was like, oh, wait, Wade's a fun guy. He's great to be around. He's pleasant, all these things. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is every time they've tried to hire a coach, I don't know if it's necessarily been for just the right coach. I think there's always been some other motive in mind as they've hired, you know, these guys. And so, yeah, I think this.
I like that. It's almost like Jerry's, I'm going to assess the problems. Now I know what this football team needs. I got the guy for it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, with Parcells, you know, and I was excited about Parcells after working for Campo, you know, and I love Dave. I mean, I love Dave as a person, and I felt like I let Dave down. I keep saying that. But Parcells coming in, I'm like, okay, now we're going to be on the football track. Now we're going to figure these things out. Heck, Parcells took all that garbage that we drafted and signed and went to a playoff with, you know?
Yeah.
So, but Jerry, I think even it gets to the point with the McCarthy, Jerry gets influenced by people. Jerry, someone's telling Jerry, hey, you need to talk to this guy. You need to talk to Mike McCarthy here. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Jerry's feeling good. Hey, this is my buddy again. You know, he's got a history. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's all those
Dad
things.
Dad known as a bar.
Yeah. I mean, now all of a sudden, Mike always talks
it's a
about
big one
the,
there. It's always, a big one there. Jerry's like, well, hold on. What do you have at the bar?
At the bar. Yeah.
You know, what are you working? Do you have what I want back
there?
Bar
food. Yeah, bar food. Pizza, wings. What do you got going there? Onion rings. I like onion rings. Fried pickles.
Important.
Yeah, all good. But I always felt like that Jerry, there was always something motivating Jerry other than maybe getting the right coach.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? With Parcells, it's like, I can't run another Dave Campo out here. You know, I've got to get a stadium built. I got a vote to get. And by the way, man, this guy, Parcells was in a good spot too, because he was going through a divorce and his ex-wife took him for some big money.
Ouch.
he needed the job. You know, yeah. He needed to come and say, yeah, okay. But then Jerry got tired
of
him.
What you get for getting married in New York.
Yeah. You know? Jerry got tired of him. It's like, Bill, I don't want to coach. Yeah, I want to coach. I might coach. I don't. Jerry's like, all right, no, stay gone, Bill. Bye. We'll do something else here.
Yeah. Instead of finding the perfect coach and going through a great interview process and maybe finding stuff out, there's another piece of the big picture that the coach has to fit into. And shoot, you know, I'll stand on what I say, but I also want to say I think Cowboys can overcome this. It's not a curse. It's a little bit of a handicap. And I think, you know, why has this organization been pretty much a failure other than Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells up to this point with head coaching under Jerry Jones? I think we're hitting on it.
Yeah, but I think when you're interviewing for the head coach or you're interviewing the head coach, you've got to know who his staff is going to be.
Yes.
You know, you got to vet him to say, okay, who is going to be your staff? Jerry was very adamant about, no, no. And Mike McCarthy was very adamant about, no, no. Hey, they wanted Kellen Moore. He wanted Kellen Moore. That wasn't my suggestion. He wanted Kellen Moore. But how about the other coaches? How about vetting the other coaches?
Yeah.
Who's going to be your DC? How about a little research about that? Hey, you willing? I'm hearing this about your guy. You know, if you're not totally comfortable with the staff that people are interviewing that are bringing you, then you shouldn't give that guy the job.
Well, you know, I think you made more great points there, Brian. I think you're just killing it on this one. I'll go back to late last week. These are the kind of things that I'm talking about that I think makes the owner a significant detriment to winning, because all of this goes to him believing all that work and do I want to vet his staff? I'm sure he's got it. I'm hiring the head coach. He's probably got all this stuff handled, and there's not an appetite for rolling up your sleeves and really understanding all of the details.
No, that's fair. When you start to talk about it that way and the discussions that you and I have, that's a very fair thing. And I think when you're hiring a coach, you have got to, you know, you just had the same coach for almost 10 years. You know, you've got to figure out, okay, what did I learn along the way? I'm not going to let this happen to me again. And, you know, the fact that it really was a two-person search, I don't think you're doing yourself any favors by doing it that way.
Well, I think part of what influences Jerry heavily here, and you helped me because you know the ins and outs of this team and the history, but what he learned along the way is that Jimmy got a ton of the credit. Jimmy betrayed him. And I think it put him in a place where he wasn't enjoying being the owner. He wants to enjoy being the owner. So can I enjoy being the owner if I'm obsessed with everything the coach is doing and I'm mad and I'm going to fire him? I need to have a meeting about firing the coach again. Or is it easier to say, I trust the guy. You know, he knows football. Is it a 4-3? Is it a 3-4? Does it really matter? You know, you'll get Bill Parcells coming on here talking. It's just about how good the players are. The players aren't good enough. And you know what? If the players aren't that good, we're not winning anything anyway. So why should I get all worked up, fire friends who I've built relationships with? This game is hard. It's complicated. And you'll go 8-8 a lot. So why get fired up that we're not 11-5 and fire people? And when you have all of that money coming in, 3 Super Bowls and a gold jacket, just enjoying life, another Super Bowl is not adding to your legacy that much. It's not changing your reputation. It's a very, very attractive mindset that you can be lured into, especially if you spent your first 10 years mad at people, firing people, trying to figure out what the answers are. You can chase your tail. And for a football person, chasing your tail, trying to obsess over winning is pie in the sky. For an investor, for an oil man, for a guy who hit big, enjoying your life's accomplishments in your 70s, I think, is the primary. It's the big goal right now.
I can't wait, Gavin.
Till what?
Till I get to my 70s and I can enjoy my life accomplishments. And I hope
don't take your uncle's money and buy the football team when you get there, Jeff. That's all.
Yeah, but I would try in the time that I spent worrying about the team. Like, yes, I would golf every day, but after that, I'd watch the tape.
All right, let me ask you this though, Jeff: if you could buy the football team, would you do exactly what Jerry did, knowing what you know right now about how things work, about how you would evaluate and scout and want to do and put things together?
I am arrogant enough that I would do what Jerry does in terms of I would give myself the final decision, but I would immediately hire Dane Brugler and Brian brought us, and I would.
No, I'm going to the lake. You don't hire me. I'm out. I mean,
you get a consultant fee because I own the team. I can afford that. You know, I'll just fire you off an email every other Tuesday. Ask you.
I believe in Jeff. I believe Jeff would put his passion and heart into it for 8 years, win 3 Super Bowls, and then kick his feet up and be a billionaire the rest of his life.
Yeah, I think there's just something to that. If you understand, you know, and you would figure that the Joneses would understand after 25 years. You know, maybe the Super Bowls came very early in their ownership. You know, maybe it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty easy to do. And then we had that terrible run with Campo and then, you know, Parcells, he gets a stadium built and, you know, all those things. But, you know, you would like to believe that we need to do it this way. We can't do it the other way.
That would run contrary, really, I think, to what Jerry needs to believe about Jimmy. It wasn't his coaching brilliance. You know, we made a collection of awesome trades that gave us a massive talent advantage. That's why we won, not coaching. And, you know, admitting that coaching can be a decisive factor in the trajectory of your organization, I think in Jerry's very petty Jimmy Johnson brain, the part of his brain that deals with the Jimmy Johnson stuff, that interferes heavily in this. When we come back, Nation, it is time for Cowboys Game Day Audio. What did DiNucci have to say about debuting with a star on his helmet? You'll hear from him and more next in the G-Bag Nation. Okay, we have Cowboys Game Day Audio here amidst a little bit of Cowboys breaking news to talk about here with you. As Jeff sent this over here at the break, it's a tweet from Ian Rappaport at Rapsheet NFL Network. Cowboys have made it known that defensive end Everson Griffin is available in trade. About half of his $6 million salary is left for a team looking for edge help. Makes sense with the Cowboys' record. Yeah, if you could get that off and save a couple of million dollars against the cap to apply to next year, maybe pick up some draft compensation for Everson Griffin as well, that would be excellent. What is he worth? And can we take this to mean that no other Cowboy defensive linemen are available, at least as of yet?
Well, Fish is throwing the name Dontari Poe and the name Daryl Worley into the pile. So basically all of their free agent signings. And I'll say this. I don't think anyone will offer you literally anything for Dontari Poe or Daryl Worley. But with Everson Griffin, $3 million for down the stretch, it's important to remember every team could have signed him this offseason, and none of them did. But I would not be surprised if you could get a conditional pick from somebody where it's like, yeah, sure, we'll take the $3 million left for him the rest of the way. We think he can be better for us than he's been for you. And if he's active for 5 or 6 games down the stretch for us, you get a 6th or 7th round pick. Maybe you could get that for Everson Griffin. And if you can get that, you absolutely should trade him. If you can get anything, you trade him.
All right, let's get some Everson Griffin audio here coming in for you, G-Bag Nation, and salute to Zach Rowe. You may know him as Z-Ro, but he cut up the post-game audio last night. We have 4 cuts from Everson Griffin, who, according to breaking news, the Cowboys are making available. He talked here, cut number 1, what is the main issue with the pass rush right now, Everson?
I think at the end of the day, I think it's up to the Dallas Cowboys and the players, like the players on the Dallas Cowboys, to be able to go out there and execute our assignments. It never has to do with the other team. I feel like we have to go out there and play better, and that's it. And that's the end of it. We just have to play better run defense.
Okay, I like that. You know, it's kind of like the question you can ask as a reporter: is it more important to score more than the other team? You know. That's the equivalent answer that Everson just gave. We need to play better.
Yep, okay. Our goal is to, the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys, if we play better, we can do better than we've been doing, and we need to.
Our goal is to play better than the other team.
Yep.
You're welcome. Cut number 2 here. Is there a here-we-go-again stigma happening with this football team, Everson?
No, not really. We just got to be able to start fast and finish fast. It is a little draining, but at the end of the day, we're professionals and we got to be able to bounce back and, you know, go out there and attack and do our job. And I feel like we're not doing that right now. And I feel like we got to go back to the drawing board and we got to go out there and play better defense, be gap sound and, you know, fight to the very end.
All right.
Okay. So here's the good thing that I would say about what Everson Griffin's saying. Is he is saying everything that you're supposed to say.
Sure.
Like, the thing around Everson Griffin before he was signed is a lot of people after his episode probably thought he was a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can hear even in this audio that he's different than most people. But he's clearly doing his best to say and do the things that you're supposed to do as a professional. So
yeah,
for whatever that's worth, he's doing that.
Well said. Good energy from him. Yeah. Yeah. Does your morale drop cut three when the defense gets down like that?
No, our morale is great. We just got to keep on fighting.
Is that difficult to do when each game kind of unfolds the same way, or how do you have to approach that mentally to make sure frustration doesn't set in?
I think we're professionals, and part of being a professional is handling adversity during a game. There's going to be situations during the game that's going to arise, and it's up to us as the players to go out there and execute our assignment when we're down, when we're up, when we lose it. It doesn't matter. I feel like as professionals, we got to keep on going out there and just keep on working our craft and get better each and every rep.
It's so hard to keep playing when you're getting smashed. Oh,
yeah.
And then other guys on your team aren't good. It's just, it's a perfect storm for give up. But, I mean, to his point, it's not like you just go to the fourth quarter and they're getting beat. Oh, they gave up because they're down 20 points. They're giving up these big plays from the very beginning of most of these games. 20-yard rushes happening first quarter constantly.
And if you want the ultimate sign of what's happened to the team this year, Mike Nolan was having a press conference, Gavin.
Yeah.
He was on a call with reporters.
Okay.
They had to shut it down because he had Tabasco sauce on his finger and he accidentally wiped his eye with it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so Mike Nolan had to shut down his press conference because he got Tabasco sauce in his eye.
That'll happen.
There's a joke in there somewhere about couldn't stop something.
I'll do that quite often, unfortunately. When you're barbecuing a lot, your hands get out there, they get the smoke, and then you come back and rub your eyes, and that is incredibly irritating. I'm a big fan of the jalapeno flavored potato chips. Those will get you.
Okay.
Orange Magic wings, when you're preparing them with the Frank's Hot, those will get you after eating something peppery. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a reason to shut something down. Just a little eye water. I think you can tough it out through that, unless it's some of that ghost sauce.
Yeah, if it's ghost sauce, you're not.
Yeah, you're
maybe
done.
Mike Nolan doesn't have the heart for it.
Maybe he's not very tough.
First sign of adversity, shut down his presser.
He's kind of a pretty boy, Okay, cut number three here with Amari Cooper. Amari three, coach talk about the lack of response when Andy Dalton went down your quarterback. What was it like on the field for you?
I don't know.
What are the emotions like after you lose two quarterbacks in 14 days?
It's disappointing. Obviously it's a sad thing when your teammates go down and get hurt because, you want to be healthy throughout the duration of the season. Everybody who's played football has been hurt before, and we all know how emotional it can be. And so, yeah, of course, we feel for Andy and Dak.
So he was asked, what is the right response to the Dalton hit? And he said, I don't know. Is this something that all football players know intuitively, inherently, or learned, I guess, would be the more appropriate thing, that if your quarterback does go down, you got to fight the other team? I mean, what are the rules here, guys?
It's always, I guess, in my life in football, it was always reactionary. If something dirty happens to a teammate or, anything along those lines, there's going to be a 15-yard penalty. And it'll probably be offsetting because the ref saw what that guy did. So you'll usually just have offsetting penalties. But there's always been guys on every team I ever played on that it's just an automatic reaction. You did something you should not have done. It's not okay. And we're out here in suits of armor, so it's not like I'm on the streets assaulting you. You will get hit. It's just always been a natural reaction that at least one person.
I mean, T.O. got hit just for standing on a star.
Yeah, it's a natural reaction, and that was the second time. So, the first time, nobody really realized what was happening. But when they did, there's at least one guy that was like, no, you don't do that here.
Well, I remember the game very well because I was in the locker room. Darren Woodson got kicked out the same game, and I went down to Woody, and I was going to talk to him about it. And he went to the shower. I was watching the game on TV. Then George Teague takes a run at T.O. He's in the locker room. Woody comes out of the shower and goes, what happened to you? And he goes, I took a run at T.O. And he goes, about time somebody got pissed off around here. Seriously, that happens. And, yeah, to your point, I just think, and I'm not, I keep talking about the young guys, and I don't know if they saw it. They go to his aid. They see him on the ground. They know something bad's happened. And I just kind of feel like that they're shell-shocked a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing.
It's a fair point. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about it next hour. We have the C-Note, the Cowboys News of the Evening, coming up at 6:20. Everything being written, everything breaking news about your Cowboys on a Cowboys Monday. DiNucci, cut three. What do you think about playing for the Cowboys?
If you would have told me, you know, a year ago that this is where I was going to be in a year, I think I would say no way. You'd have to pinch me. But, you know, here we are. It's 2020. No one really knows what to expect, you know, the next day, let alone, you know, a week down the road. So, you know, here we are. You know, this team drafted me for a reason, and Coach McCarthy, you know, brought me here for a reason. So if my number's called in the future, you know, I'm going to make sure that I do everything I can to, you know, keep the show on the road and make sure that, you know, the other guys in the locker room got as much faith in me out there as, you know, number four, number 14.
So, yeah, the team did draft him and bring him in for a reason. You might have heard it there in the voice signature, but DiNucci, he's from the same place as McCarthy a little bit.
Hey.
I guess they're from the same area of Pittsburgh there.
There's some kind of story in there where, like, McCarthy coached either him or his brother in basketball, or McCarthy's family member coached him in basketball
in eighth grade.
There's something in there. There's a tie.
Mike's known him since he was, like, 13 or something like that. Mike's been following his career a little bit there, so he'd had him tabbed for a while.
Nice player at James Madison. Nice player.
Started off at Pittsburgh, though.
Yeah,
you know,
see, I was listening to the pregame show. I heard that story with Brad. I love Brad's reaction to it when Babe told him. I was like, was that just a segue? Or is he maybe turning his nose up a little bit? I couldn't tell. Sometimes it's hard to tell when Brad's talking. But I don't want my team having a head coach that's like, yeah, this kid's from my part of the country. You know, I love this DiNucci kid. You kidding me? I mean, that's your developmental
quarter. Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I hope it
I don't like the regional picks ever.
No.
I guess they work out sometimes when you get a Cole Beasley on your team. But
no, you need that to be a coincidence where it's like, well, no, this is a quarterback that we really liked the traits and we thought he was absolutely worth being picked. And I'm familiar with his character and I know that he wants it or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Give me an inside hook. Okay, Jeff, you mentioned this Deion Sanders play against Don Beebe.
And
I've been watching it. It was a couple of segments ago. But we were talking about DK Metcalf catching Buda Baker in the Seahawks and Cardinals game yesterday. And here you have it when Don Beebe is a member of the Bills. And Deion, is he with Atlanta or San Francisco? It's white and red Atlanta. Atlanta looks like. And Beebe's threw it like midfield through a pack of would-be tacklers that Deion's a part of. Is he on special teams coverage? And Beebe goes by him at full speed, and somehow Deion gets to full speed in two steps. And within 5 yards is actually making progress. And, yes, 25 yards down the field, a streaking 4.25 speed Don Beebe has been caught by primetime. Hawked him.
He was moving. Because Don Beebe was moving. Deion was moving. You say something twice, it means you're doing it better.
I mean, he had to catch him. And because of his lack of tackling ability, kind of had to get up on his shoulder pads and just hang on to him. So you're not catching him and diving. You had to catch all the way up to his back and then, like, hitch a ride and drag him down slowly over a 5 or 10 yard period.
It was Don Beebe's goofy-ass helmet that slowed him down with all that.
That was Mark Kelso.
All that goofiness on top. Don Beebe didn't have one,
too? No, Mark Kelso had the helmet.
Don Beebe had that joint.
Mark Kelso had the helmet on top of the helmet.
Yeah, all right.
That was a goofy-ass helmet. You're right about that, Lucius.
I love that look. Yeah. It was popular with the linemen for a while, right, to reduce the head blows?
Too many concussions, Mark Kelso. Yeah, that was a big problem there.
Well, you won't get a concussion during Flagtober 2020. We can guarantee it because it's virtual. It's all online this year. 105thefan.com/Flagtober. We want to salute a buddy of ours, a Tolo named Chris in San Antonio. He heard that we were having a charge for flags this year, $27 a piece because we can't get out there and do the remotes and appearances. But all the proceeds are going to Sons of the Flag, which is a nonprofit that benefits burn survivors in the military. And Chris is a veteran himself. He's a Tolo himself. So he bought a bunch of them, and we're going to make those available for, you know, for military guys who can't fit one in the budget. So we salute Chris for doing that, and we salute you for participating in Flagtober. I know a lot of you want to make sure your collection is complete. This thing is amazing. It's camo. It's going to make the collection pop. 105thefan.com/Flagtober there to get it ordered up, and salute to Kingsville Beer, this year's sponsor of Flagtober. Jeff, where are we going next?
Well, Everson Griffin is on the trade block, and we'll walk you through how to rebuild the Cowboys. He's got to go, but he's not the only one. It's next.
Well, thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation. Time now for Jeff Kavanaugh's unnamed segment of the day.
All right. It is. We don't appreciate Mike McCarthy taking his press conference time, you know, getting there and pushing the 420 segment to 540 because we found water on the moon, you know. That was the announcement. It wasn't whether the moon is a moon, but we'll just have to wait on that until tomorrow.
They can do it all now. They can start using the moon as like a jump-off spot.
All right, let's go frack it or whatever we do with stuff. I want to talk about the Cowboys, though, because the initial report from Ian Rappaport was that Everson Griffin is being shopped, Cowboys defensive end. Brian, I appreciate you sending me Josina Anderson, who just got off the phone with Everson Griffin. He said, I don't think the Cowboys want to trade me. I haven't heard that. She says, meanwhile, I'm also told via source, the team hasn't shopped him officially. People have asked about him. And then she adds, I was also just told that the expectation here is that the team will see if any team, quote, makes it worthwhile as part of its due diligence. Well, I'm here to tell you that worthwhile means anything. If you can get a draft pick for Everson Griffin, you should take it. Now, I made a video on the YouTube and the 105.3thefan.com this morning where I went through what I would consider the proper way to rebuild for the Cowboys, and it's right this second. It's what you can do right this second. And trading Everson Griffin was part of that. And so I thought, man, how would I ever figure out who all I can trade and what they might bring me back? And so I'm racking my brain. Like, where could I, like an NFL guy, anybody who had maybe like worked in a front office or drafted and knew about the picks and trading. And then I was like, oh, my God, Brian Broaddus is on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so here's what I want to do. My idea is basically every Cowboy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, trade them. Literally everyone. Because, well, let me take that back. Because technically, like, Dak would be an unrestricted free agent. Not Dak. But all of the guys who are currently playing football for the Cowboys, that it does not look like they're going to extend, they're not going to be a part of the future and whatever you're going to be doing next year and into the years to come. And to me, what the Cowboys got to do is right now they're going to have 9 draft picks. I want to see if I can get that number to 11 or 12.
Let's go.
Because this defense is in a bad enough spot that I want to throw at least 8 darts at defense in the draft. I need corners. I need safeties. I need defensive tackles. I might want to throw an offensive lineman in the mix. I need bodies, and I need to have a lot of chances for some of them to hit.
Gonna have to throw a dodge dart at it.
Yes, that would be great. I marked 2 guys off the list who fit you. Shut up! I marked 2 guys off the list who
dart
I think.
Bus service.
Hey.
There you go, Brian. That's the winner right there. That's what we were looking for.
There's 2 guys that I think have 0 trade value, and no one will trade for them, so it doesn't matter. If you want to cut them, fine. If you want to leave them on the roster, fine. And that's Daryl Worley and Dontari Poe.
Wow, oh. Jeff.
Okay. Now, tell me if I'm wrong, Brian, but I think they have no value.
Jeff, you gave me this project to study, and I did it, and I actually reached out to several teams around the league, and the exact names that you just said that they didn't feel like that you could get anything for were those 2 players.
Sweet. So we're right on track. This one, I have no clue if you could get anything for him, but he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, and he's probably not part of your future plans. Noah Brown. Did you even – I don't think I gave you his name on my initial list.
You
but
didn't
he's
give
an
me Noah Brown.
Free agent.
Yeah.
If somebody's desperate at receiver – and wants to give me a conditional late-round pick for Noah Brown, let's go. Take him.
I bet you Jay Jeezy wants him.
Boy, wouldn't that be
great.
This
guy will come around the edge and smack the nose if you want him.
Yeah. That crack toss is legendary. Lombardi sweep.
Look at this guy. He's only 210 pounds. He hits like a Mack truck.
Yeah.
Okay, the next guy. And this is who the reports are about right now. Everson Griffin. I feel kind of like Fish, where I just did a video this morning where I was like, this is what they should do. And then a report comes out that Griffin's on the block. And I'm like, well, I told you 5 hours ago they should have traded this guy. So Everson Griffin is a guy that my guess is you might find a team that'll give you something, Brian, maybe?
Yeah, the team that everybody seems to feel that might be into this is because Pete Carroll has some familiarity with the player, you know, knows the guy, that Seattle might be the team that you could move him on to. But that was one team said that. Three other teams said there was no value there.
Okay. So maybe a conditional pick from somebody for Griffin. If you can get it, take it.
Right. Because Seattle being the team that they thought, that one guy thought.
Okay, keep Seattle in mind, because here's the next guy that I want to bring up. Alden Smith.
Okay, now you're cooking.
I would trade him today, because where they are with the cap and what they want to do with Dak, and they've already restructured all their guys, if Alden Smith keeps playing the way he's playing, he's a $12 or $15 million player, and I don't think the Cowboys have it. So you could let him walk for a comp pick, but you got to wait a year on that. I don't want to wait. Can I find somebody, Brian, to give me a fifth and maybe even a fourth for Alden Smith?
Well, I tell you what, Jeff, you're cooking right now. That's exactly what these guys are talking about. They said that, you know, I asked the question, do you get like a sixth or a seventh for Alden Smith to a team? It was no, you can get much higher than that. The question I didn't have is 4 or 5 type question mark. And every team said yes. So that was the teams I called. They feel like that Alden Smith has either fourth or fifth round value right now.
That would be a great return for a guy that's not going to be a part of your future. And if you win this year with your long-term pieces, so be it. So here's the added benefit of this. In theory, I've moved Everson Griffin and Alden Smith, and I have either a fourth or a fifth round pick, and I have a conditional seventh from Griffin, right? So maybe I've added 2 draft picks. And now, Randy Gregory ain't playing 6 plays. He's playing 25. And now, Bradley and I is not playing 1 play. He's playing 25. I'm going to figure out what I have in the guys who are going to be here. So, Griffin's gone. Alden Smith is gone. And I know that one hurts, because he's one of your actual good defenders.
But if you can't afford him, it doesn't really matter that
much. Right. Yeah.
If you're not going to extend him, it doesn't matter. Move along. Take your pick. So, now Gregory gets to play and I get to play. Griffin and Alden Smith are gone.
Love it.
Next, my guy. If Xavier Woods is not being extended, I'm shopping Xavier Woods right now. Is there a team out there that's in playoff contention that has a safety spot that's playing really bad? And can I get a fifth? Or I'll settle for a sixth for Xavier Woods. Brian, can I get a pick for him?
He falls in the 6 to 7 category for these teams that I talked to.
And now, guess what else? As we're not tanking, we're just moving along the guys who are going to be moving along anyway and getting as many picks in return as we can. Xavier Woods is gone. Guess who is now active and playing for me every week? 4th-round pick, Reggie Robinson. We're going to find out what we got because we drafted him.
Right.
Let's see what you got. Put him on the field. So next, I'm going to go to the Cowboys' corners.
Yes, I was waiting for that.
Jordan Lewis and Cheeto. They're both in the last year of their deal. If any contending team thinks that Jordan Lewis can help him in the slot or thinks that Cheeto can help him on the outside, and I do think that Cheeto should have some value, then can I add another 6th and 7th? Or can I get anything for Jordan, and what can I get for Cheeto, Brian?
The thought is you could get more for Awuzier, and that would be into that probably the 5th-round range. And then with Lewis, you're looking more in the 6 to 7 category.
Okay. So let me put in everything that I just got. If he's in 6 to 7 and he's in 6 to 7, I'm going to give him a 6. I'm going to give him a 7. So in my world with what the Cowboys should be doing right this second, trade Everson Griffin, trade Alden Smith, trade Xavier Woods, trade Jordan Lewis, trade Cheeto. And now these guys who are all in the last year of their deals, and you could get comp picks if you just play it out and let them walk for the guys who get decent contracts. Cheeto would probably qualify, Woods and Alden. But in this scenario, I'm adding for this upcoming draft a 4 or a 5 for Alden Smith, a 7 for Griffin, a 7 for Jordan Lewis, a 6 for Xavier Woods, a 5 for Chidobe Awuzier. We have now added 5 picks to our current haul of 9 picks, and I got 14 draft picks for a team that desperately needs young talent that plays on the cheap, go. Fire sale this thing. I'm not talking about Michael Gallup. I'm not talking about the guys who are under contract, going to be here, and planning to win the Super Bowl a year from now. But any of these guys that you are not planning to extend and they're not going to be here beyond this year, go, 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 go.
By the way, I threw Gallup's name out there.
Stop it. And what did I say, a two?
No, actually a three.
Okay.
To a team. Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah, no, I you know,
people value their draft picks.
They do, they do. And they, I was saying, can you get a two for this guy? And the teams, all every team that I responded to said he's a three right now, is what they said. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he did have back to back donuts, right? Zero catches last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he struggled a little bit. Yeah.
I mean,
the Giants game was huge. Yeah, exactly. That's the quarterback not being out there probably hurts him a little bit.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation, Jeff's unnamed segment of the day, daily at 5:40. Check back in every day for more of that gold. But coming up next, how big of a deal is it they didn't start a brawl after that guy got hurt? We'll hit you with that and some of the other big stories from around the NFL coming out of Week 7. That is next in the G-Bag Nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.